Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Shalom Aleichem, Assalamu Aleichem, Namaste, Pak Satnam, Sat Sri Akal, Tashi Dalek, Ho Lila Tanyan Wasi Yaki. Hello, may everything be well with you, as it is with me. We will continue our teaching today regarding the nature of devakut, or clinging to God, or union with God, a form of the Jewish mystical form of, or the Jewish form of mystical union with God, Unio Mystica. And we will continue that, but before I begin with that, I will do as I do every day at the beginning of a shiur, and that is I will recite the Kaddish for the dead and the mourners of the dead. So please close your eyes as you listen and remember someone to whom you were close who has passed away. In doing so, you'll honor that person's life and bless his or her memory with the light of your own consciousness, about which we will be speaking later in today's teaching. Ellie, please don't interrupt me while I'm preparing to either recite any blessings or while I'm teaching. This is not a chat room. It's a teaching room. It's a shiur. And so I'd appreciate it if you would either listen quietly and pay attention, or if you want to chat, go find another room, because that's not what the purpose of this room is. Yiskudol v'yishkudash me'rabo, bomo divero kirase, v'yamlik malkase, b'kayakon, uv'yomakon, uv'kaya dekol beis Yisrael, ba'agalo uv'yizman koryev, v'yimru amen. Yehesh me'rabo mavorak, le'olam ule ome omayo, yisbarak v'yistabak v'yisparar v'yisromam, v'yisnase v'yisadar v'yisale v'yisalal. Shmeidu kadcho, beraku, la'elo minkol berkaso visharoso, tush bekoso venekamoso, da'amirom be'omo ve'imru omen. Yehe shlomo rabo min shamayo, ve'kayim aleinu ve'alko Yisrael ve'imru omen. Ose shalom bimramov, huyashe shalom aleinu ve'alko Yisrael ve'imru omen. Thank you very much. Now, as I just said, we've been talking about the nature of devakut, which is the Hebrew word for unio mystica, which is just a Latin term for the process, a generic term, for the process of clinging to or the state of union with God. This is a mystical state that we're talking about here. We stated in our last shiur that it is the highest goal to which a mystic can attain in any form of mysticism, and we pointed out that it goes by different names under different religions. For example, we said that in Hinduism it's called samadhi, in Buddhism it's called nirvana, in Jainism it's called moksha, in Islam it's called irfan, Christianity it's called illumination, and in Judaism it's called devakut. And of course, the literal meaning of the word devakut, which is a Hebrew word, is clinging to, chasing after, following in pursuit, close pursuit of, or union with. And it's in reference to, it's used in mysticism in reference to God. So the mystic, the Jewish mystic, the Kabbalist, is seeking out a close personal relationship with. Indeed, the ultimate in that relationship is a state of union with God, or God's divine presence here on earth, the Shekinah. We taught that devakut, union with or clinging to God, is one of the most important of the 613 mitzvot listed in the Torah, being repeated over and over again throughout Deuteronomy and in Book of Joshua and elsewhere. And we taught that one who engages in devakut will merit the divine presence of the Lord. The Shekinah will descend upon him. Indeed, we are taught by Rabbi Eliezer that, and here's what he says, I have a quote here, whoever cleaves to the divine presence, okay, and remember, cleaves to means joins with, okay, the divine presence, the divine spirit will surely dwell upon him. And so if we put that into more modern terminology, we can take those code words, divine presence and divine spirit, and cleaves and dwell upon, and rewrite that sentence to say, in very clear modern English, to say that whoever cleaves to or joins with the Shekinah, God's feminine aspect, will receive Ruach HaKodesh, divine inspiration. And we said that divine inspiration comes either in the high form of prophecy of various levels, or at its lowest level, in the form of personal revelation to the mystic of various secrets within, usually in the context of within secrets hidden deep within the Torah, with respect to how to interpret various things within the Torah. And finally, last Friday, we left off by reading you this teaching. Rabbi Isaac the Blind, who was perhaps the first Kabbalist, he lived in Provençal, France, between 1160 and 1235 of the Common Era. Anyway, Isaac the Blind said this concerning Deuteronomy 13:5, which is one of the passages that enjoins all Jews to engage in devakut, or to cling to or hold fast to our Lord. And here's what he says regarding Deuteronomy 13, verse 5. The principal task of Hamaskalim, which is Hebrew for the mystics, and of those who contemplate on his name, is expressed in the commandment, and ye shall cleave unto him. That's taken from Deuteronomy 13:5. And ye shall cleave unto him. And he continues on. Remember, this is Isaac the Blind. And this is a central principle of the Torah, and of prayer, and of reciting, the blessings, to harmonize one's thought with one's faith as though it cleaved to the worlds above. Okay, that's one of our tasks. That's one of the central principles of Torah, prayer, and the blessings, is to harmonize our thought with our faith. And then when those two are joined together as a whole, we raise them up so that they cleave to the worlds above. And then once we've done that, we do the rest of what he says here, which is to conjoin God in his letters and to link the ten sephirot in him, meaning God, as a flame is joined to a coal, articulating his, meaning God's, epithets aloud and conjoining him mentally in his true structure. And we talked quite a bit about that, so I'm not going to go over that. But basically, this is a very Kabbalistic process, which is described here, very specifically Kabbalistic. It's talking about, first of all, harmonizing the disparate parts of one's self, harmonizing the ego consciousness, the human ego, with the self, which is the imago Dei, the image of God that is stamped upon each one of the elect's hearts. Okay? And I'm assuming that you would not be a mystic if you were not one of God's elect. Yes, there are elect. I'm not going to get into that right now. But anyway, so what one does first is prepares oneself to be an intermediary, to step into the position on the Sephirotic tree of the ninth Sephirah, Isod, which is also known as Tzadik, one who is going to become the Shaliach, the intermediary between the upper worlds and the lower worlds. And you see here in this first statement as to the first part of the task is to harmonize one's thought with one's faith. That's the union, That's the unification, the yihud, that the mystic performs, as though it cleaved to the worlds above. That's the purpose, is to allow us to stand in the position of the ninth sephira, tzaddik, so that we can then perform the function of that sephira, which is to unify the upper sephirot, or the upper worlds, to the lower world, known as Malkut, or kingdom. That's our world. Okay? And then what do we do when we stand in that position of Yesod? Then, by articulating the names of God and the epithets for those names, these are the different epithets associated with the names of God. Okay, see if I can think of an example here. Well, one of the names of God is El Shaddai, and of course that means either God of the mountain, because God has his own mountain, the mountain of God, Sinai, or it also means God Almighty. Okay, so whenever we use the word the Almighty and refer to God as the Almighty, that's an epithet. It's a metaphor, all right? So what we do is we articulate these metaphors for the names of God, because what they do is they bring into our consciousness this image, this metaphorical image, and this helps to focus our kavana, our mystical intention, upon the task at hand. And the task at hand, when we're standing in the position of the ninth sephirot of the Etz Chaim, is to join as a flame is joined to a coal, a burning flame is joined to a coal, God in his letters, and to link the ten sephirot in him. Thus, rejoining God to himself, the disparate parts of God that have been separated into the ten manifestations of God into this world, in which he increasingly gives up more and more of himself and his power and his omniscience, becoming more and more a God of unconsciousness as he comes down from the higher levels, from the which is the highest is omniscience, total, pure divine consciousness. And as he comes down through the ten, and I shouldn't say he, it's just a bad habit, really. God is an it, both a he and a her. And all of these pronouns, all of these metaphors are inadequate to even give us a glimpse of God, but our minds are so limited that we must rely upon the symbols of metaphors to even begin to come anywhere near being able to comprehend anything at all about Ein Sof, the Eternal. So anyway, our whole job is to reunite the ten sephirot and to join God together through those pathways between those ten sephirot, those pathways which are his letters, the 22 letters of the sacred tongue, the Hebrew Aleph Bet. And that is our function, the function of all tzaddikim, of all the righteous. It is the righteous which are the foundation of the world. And the foundation of the world, foundation, the word for foundation is what? It's Yesod, the ninth sephirot. It is, Yesod is the footstool of God who sits on his throne in the world of Berea. All right. Enough on this thing here. This is our function. This is a job. And after all, Isaac the Blind, the first well-known Kabbalist, the leader of the group in Provence, in France, somewhere between 1160 and 1235, which are his birth and death dates, he taught this, that it's the principal task of the mystics, the Hamaskalim, and also of those who contemplate on his name. These are the people who, like a later Kabbalist, Abraham Abulafia, taught to combine and recombine the letters of God's names as a form of mysticism, mystical meditation, in which one could achieve Devakut. Okay? All right. Moving on. This gives us one idea of what this Devakut is about. Okay? It's a process of joining together in internally within us the disparate parts of ourselves, the two major components, the psycho-spiritual components, which are the ego consciousness and the self with a capital S, which is actually God. The part of God that's within us and the part of us that's wholly of the body, but which is the seat of our consciousness. And without which, God can do nothing, because God has no hands, has no legs, has no arms or feet, ears, eyes, to see with, to hear with, to speak, to do with, to act with in this material world, other than ours. So God is within us to be able to act within this world. All right. Okay, moving along. Another great scholar, actually a great halakhic scholar and Kabbalist, Rabbi Moshe ben Nachman of Gerona, who's known either as the Ramban, or as more frequently actually as Nachmanides. He was born in 1194 in Gerona, Spain, and died in 1270 in Palestine. In his commentary on Deuteronomy 11:22, which is another one of the passages which commands us, which states the mitzvah, that we are to cleave to the Lord, meaning seeking mystical union with God, defines Devakut as the state of mind in which, and here's the quote, you constantly remember God and His love, nor do you remove your thought from Him, to the point that when such a person speaks with someone else, his heart is not with them at all, but is still before God. And indeed, it may be true of those who attain this rank that their soul is granted immortal life. In Hebrew, what he actually says with respect to being granted immortal life, it's zerura be zeror ha hayim, immortal life, even in their lifetime. That means even in this physical lifespan. For they are themselves a dwelling place for the Shekinah. So what he's saying here is that Devakut is the state of mind in which you constantly remember God and His love. And you do not remove your thought from God. So much so that you're distracted from everyday ordinary conversations with other people. You can go through the motions of that conversation, but your heart and your concentration really isn't with them at all. But it's still before God. You're still thinking of God in everything you think, everything you say, and everything you do. Your heart and your mind is constantly before God. And then he goes on to say, Nachmanides, and in about people who attain this level of God consciousness, because that's what we're talking about here, is we are infusing ourselves with our consciousness with God. And he says that it may be true of those who attain this rank that their soul is granted immortal life even in their lifetime. Not after they die and are resurrected, as will all of us be, but during their lifetime here in the physical world of names and forms. And he says, why? Why would this be? For they are themselves a dwelling place for the Shekinah. Okay, now this concept of being a dwelling place for the Shekinah is really important, so I want to talk about this a little bit. Nachmanides tells us that Devakut is constantly remembering God. Well, at the end of each, you might remember that phrase, or a phrase might be ringing a bell in your mind right now, because at the end of each one of these shiurim, I try to remind you to remember God at least twice each day. Remember that? I say that? Remember God at least twice each day. Why do I do this? Well, because Nachmanides talks about this. that Devakut involves a state, is a state of constantly remembering God. What is remembering? What is that? It's when it is bringing God's image and thought associations into your ego consciousness. Every time you remember God, what you have done is you have reached into the void of your mind, into the darkness of your unconsciousness, and you've located an image and a thought and the associations that are associated with that image that's called God. And you grab onto it, you pull it into your ego consciousness, and you begin to think about that. Now, since you are your consciousness, now think about what I just said here. Don't just let that go on by. We are what we think. We are our thoughts. We are our consciousness. We are the contents of our consciousness. Because this is so, when you bring God into your ego consciousness, which can be seen as a container, you are bringing God into the innermost core of your very being. And when you do that, because as I said, we are what we think, we are the contents of our ego consciousness at that very moment, a merger or union takes place. Between what? Between the ego consciousness, the concept that says, I, me, I had a great dream last night, I went to see a movie, I'm hungry, don't tread on me, okay? That part of you that thinks that way and views your body and mind as a personal, peculiar entity distinct from all others, whether they're objects, animals, or people, that's the ego consciousness, okay? And that ego consciousness is, the consciousness of that ego is the container in which the ego wraps itself, in which all these different images, it's where all of our perceptions that come from the five senses eventually come to be processed and dealt with. It's where thinking takes place. And so the union that we're talking about is when you bring God, by remembering God, and you bring God into that ego, that container called the ego consciousness, a merger takes place between God, which you have brought in, and your ego consciousness. And actually, this is a reunion. I'm not going to get into the details of this right now because it's just so it's its own subject, the subject of many lectures, teachings, shirim. But the ego is really a piece off the old block, so to speak. The self came first. God came first. And then each ego is a piece of the divine consciousness. The self is the divine consciousness. It's that imago Dei, the image of God that's stamped upon our hearts. It is the universal consciousness. Jung called it the collective consciousness. It's God. It's the only place from which meaning, it's the only source of meaning in all of the universe. Meaning can't be found anywhere else except there. Lucky for us that God has put that source within each one of us. Okay, so anyway, it's a union or a reunion because the ego is split off when we are born, and then we delude ourselves into thinking that there is no God, that we are God, that we can control everything, and eventually we learn that that's not the case at all, and we begin our search for meaning to life. And that's the return. That's return. That's the that's repentance. That's turning that we engage in. We return to God and reestablish the ego self axis, the channel. We create our own channel, just as there are channels between the ten sephirot, pathways through each one bearing one of the 22 Hebrew letters, through which the contents of the various sephirot are transmitted and their influences are transmitted. We establish our own channel called the ego-self axis in terms of Jungian psychology, theology, psycho-spirituality. So it's a reunification, a reunion that occurs when we remember God, and that's why it's important. And then Nachmanides in that teaching went on to tell us that people who do this are, quote, themselves a dwelling place for the Shekinah, end quote. Well, of course, based on what I just told you, your ego consciousness becomes a container for God's presence, which is the Shekinah, God's feminine aspect. And another epithet for the Shekinah is God's indwelling presence. Indwelling. Indwelling where? Indwelling in your heart, in your mind, in your soul. Whichever one of those metaphors that you want to think about or use. You know, a story is told of a great Hasidic master. And where I get this story from is... this comes from an essay written by Martin Buber called The Way of Man According to the Teachings of Hasidism in a book titled Hasidism and Modern Man. And he tells this story about a great Hasidic master. And I think it's really on point here. It says, "Where is the dwelling of God?" This was the question with which the rabbi of Kutsk surprised a number of learned men who happened to be visiting him. They laughed at him. "What a thing to ask! Is not the whole world full of his glory?" Then he answered his own question. "God dwells wherever man lets him in." So first, the master asks the other learned rabbis who are visiting him, "Where is the dwelling of God?" They answer, laughing, saying, "What a thing to ask! Is not the whole world full of his glory?" Meaning that the whole world is his dwelling place. But then the master answers his own question by saying, "God dwells wherever man lets him in." So man has to let God in. Man has to let God in. And about this, Martin Buber goes on to say, "This is the ultimate purpose." Okay, so listen up here. I'm about to read to you a statement from a great philosopher, theologian, a Jewish philosopher, theologian, who lived in the early 20th century, where he's going to tell us what the ultimate purpose of our lives is. Okay, so here it is. Those of you who are seeking meaning and purpose to your lives, here it is. There's more than one, but they're basically all about the same type of thing. "This is the ultimate purpose, : to let God in. But we can let him in only where we stand, where we live a true life. If we maintain holy intercourse with the little world entrusted to us, if we help the holy spiritual substance to accomplish itself in that section of creation in which we are living, then we are establishing in this place a dwelling for the divine presence." I'm going to read this again because there's so much contained within so few sentences. Martin Buber says, "This is the ultimate purpose, to let God in. But we can let him in only where we stand, where we live a true life. If we maintain holy intercourse with the little world entrusted to us, if we help the holy spiritual substance to accomplish itself in that section of creation in which we are living, then we are establishing in this our place a dwelling for the divine presence." Now think about this. Each one of us lives within a sphere of awareness and influence. Imagine, if you will, an invisible bubble surrounding you on all sides. It's there constantly, moving with you, going wherever you go. Your sphere of consciousness is this bubble. It's a sphere of consciousness. It's the things with which you're aware as you move through your life. It's like a circular beam of a flashlight in the darkness. You are aware of and can have influence over only that which comes into the light of that flashlight, which is the light of your own consciousness. All else is darkness. All else is hidden. All else is unseen. Only those things upon which you shine the circular light of your consciousness, your personal awareness, your personal consciousness. Only those things can you see. And for all these things, God gives you personal responsibility. They're not just there. They're there purposely. Purposively, they have been placed in your path. Everything upon which you shine the light of your personal consciousness is either blessed or cursed by your personal consciousness. You might go, whoa, that's a pretty heavy-duty responsibility. Where do you get that? Well, just keep listening. Just as we in this world receive God's holy shafa, which is His divine overflowing sustenance, which flows down to us from the highest of the ten sephirot, Keter, the All, Kol, the All. Okay, that is the source of all divine sustenance, and it flows down through the ten sephirot, through those 22 passages, those channels of the 22 holy Hebrew letters. Into what? They're gathered together into the ninth sephirah that I just talked to you about, that we as tzaddikim, the righteous, stand in and serve as the foundation of the world, as the footstool of God upon the world. Yesod, tzaddik, the name of that sephirah. All of the God's Shafa is channeled through that, and it's channeled through that into the world. Well, remember, when we are in holy devakut, when we cleave with God, then we are that sephira, that ninth sephira. We are that fructifying, fertilizing, inseminating essence. All of God's Shafa flows in that moment through us into Malkut, the world. The entire world? No, not the entire world. Only that part of the world that God has guided our footsteps on our holy path of our lives, the paths of our lives, to encounter. And those things are, as I said, we can tell what they are because they've come within the spotlight of the light of our consciousness. These are the things for which we are responsible. It is up to us to bless them or curse them. And we can do both, or we can do neither. We can ignore them. And that's in the form of a blight. Well, not a blight, I'm sorry. That would be if we curse them. It would be instead of a blessing or a fructification or a fertilization, And instead of a cursing, which would be a blight on these things that are waiting for God's holy shafa through us, instead, they get neither. And what that's like is that's like the deprivation of light to a plant or an animal, the deprivation of water and sustenance. We deprive them of everything and anything. And they wither and die. So we have personal responsibility over everything upon which we shine the light of our personal consciousness. And it's our responsibility to bless them. Just as we and this world receive God's holy shafa, divine sustenance, so do we radiate forth that sustenance through the form of our own living energy, because remember, we have united our ego consciousness with the divine essence of the Shekinah, God's indwelling presence in the world. So that indwelling presence transmits through our ego consciousness, this living energy, this divine sustenance. And we shine that upon, through our ego consciousness, upon the things of this world. Now, in the passage I just read, Buber is urging us to constantly remember this fact and to constantly be aware of the nature, the color, the tone of the psycho-spiritual energy that we emit. He urges us to look for the holy sparks that dwell in all creatures. He calls it... how does he say? Let me look up here again. What does he call this? He says... If we help the holy spiritual substance to accomplish itself, he calls it the holy spiritual substance, which I just called the divine holy sparks, to accomplish itself. Okay? That means it has a purpose. It has a goal of existence. Everything in this world has a higher purpose. And that is to return, of course, to the higher levels from which all of them came. So it's our job to be constantly aware of these facts, of these circumstances. He urges us to look for those holy sparks that dwell in all creatures and in all objects within the sphere of our influence, and to consciously bless them with the energy and blessings of Gevura, which is strength, and Chesed, which is loving kindness. Consciously do this through the gates of our imagination. In doing this, we create hallowed, consecrated ground within the sphere of our influence. We also lift up those sparks. For when we do that, that is what happens, is those sparks are enervated. They are energized. And they radiate forth their glow, their own glow from within to the shells in which they are trapped on the outside. I'm talking mainly now about inanimate objects. And when they do this, they dissolve the shells, the evil shells, the klippot in Kabbalistic terms. They dissolve the evil shells. And as those holy sparks rise back up and transcend the world of Malkut, and go up through us, Yesod and Tzadik, Tzadikim, more than one of us, as they pass through us, they serve as nourishment, spiritual food for our souls. And then we return them as gifts through the Shekinah, who carries them up to the Holy One, blessed be He. And when we do that, as I just said, we create hallowed, consecrated ground within that bubble, within that sphere of our consciousness, within that sphere of our influence. And this attracts the Shekinah, creating a dwelling place for the Shekinah, the divine presence. This dwelling place is within the container of our hallowed consciousness. What do I mean by hallowed consciousness? It's an important distinction. You cannot do without that adjective there. Our consciousness without kavana, without mystical intention, has no power, has no effect on anything. So as long as we're only thinking about the mundane things of the world that are brought to us from the outside world of the material, physical things of the world, and they come in through the five gates of our senses into our mind, and all we're thinking about is, oh, I'm hungry, I better get something to eat, or, oh, I'm going to be late for work, or, oh, I wonder what, or we're keeping accounts, this is really the bad one, keeping accounts of wrongdoing by people, our petty little bickering. Oh, that person said this time and got my goat. But I'm going to remember that, and I'm going to wait for that opportunity, and then I'm going to give it back in spades. Anytime we do in these things, what we're doing is we are cluttering up our own space with corrupt thoughts. It's a good metaphor for this is what we say of dogs that are kenneled, and that we don't give them a place in the kennel to do their duty. We say they shit in their own pens and make them uninhabitable. Well, that's what we do. We crap in our own pens, in the containers of our consciousness, by bringing in corrupt, dark, evil influences, and we drive the Shekinah away from us. We literally drive God out of heaven. Remember in Genesis, after the sin, it says, and he drove him out. And it's usually translated or interpreted to mean that God drove the man out. I'm here to tell you that it's a Kabbalistic teaching that it was man, through his disobedience and corruption of now having within himself the pollution of the knowledge of the opposites of good and evil. And that is what drove God out from the garden, which is the consciousness of man. And now we are doomed to cultivate that garden, the garden of our own consciousness, the garden of our own mind. We have to weed it constantly. Constantly. Keep out the weeds and nourish the seeds of righteousness. And so then finally, what I'll say for today is, excuse me, we know that life without purpose and meaning is an unfulfilled life. And that's what Martin Buber says. He says here, as he talks about this concept of the personal sphere of influence that we have around us, it's the subject of a similar teaching by the Baal Shem Tov, which Martin Buber describes when he says, the Baal Shem Tov teaches that no encounter with a being or a thing in the course of our life lacks a hidden significance. The people we live with or meet with, the animals that help us with our farm work, the soil we till, the materials we shape, the tools we use, they all contain a mysterious spiritual substance. Here's that word again, a mysterious spiritual substance, the holy sparks, okay? Which depends on us for helping it toward its pure form, its perfection. If we neglect... And what I say that was? That's the return of those holy sparks to the Holy One, blessed be He. Okay? If we neglect the spiritual substance sent across our paths, if we think only in terms of momentary purposes, without developing a genuine relationship to the beings and things in whose life we ought to take part as they in ours... In other words, we and everything in our sphere of influence are connected. Metakuye Oyasi. Metakuye Oyasi. Lakota for all my relations, or we are related. Not in the sense necessarily only of biological relationships like brothers and sisters, fathers and mothers and sons and daughters. No. Relationship. Coming into relationship. Recognizing that everything in our path has been put in our path because it is our job to enter into relationship with it. With the birds, with the deer, with dogs, cats, other pets, fish, birds. With all of the plants that we come into in our path through our lives, on our spiritual journey. To take care of them, to nourish them, and to realize that it's more than their physical well-being that's being talked about. That's incidental. It's the fulfillment of their spiritual destinies that is our job, that God has given to us as our avodah, meaning divine service. The fulfillment of the spiritual destinies. And that is what we are required to do. And in doing so, they flow upward through us. The holy sparks are liberated from the evil shells. The evil shells don't just fall to the side like a walnut shell or a peanut shell after a squirrel has taken the food inside out. No. Those shells are dissolved by the energy of the holy spark inside being liberated. They are dissolved and become a part of that holy spark, of its radiance. And they come through us as the intermediary, standing in the position of Tzaddik, the righteous one, or foundation, Yesod. And they give us spiritual food, nourishment. And then we hand them over to the Shekinah. And then she, when on every Erev Shabbat, when she rises up and goes to the Holy One, blessed be He, she takes those sparks and presents them to the Holy One, blessed be He. And the reunification has taken place. The tikkun, the spiritual repair. And as the Baal Shem Tov said, or it's described as being said by Martin Buber, he says that if we do not do this, then we ourselves will be debarred from true fulfilled existence. That means that we will not have a fulfilled life. We know that life without purpose and meaning is an unfulfilled life. That is, it is an empty life, a life empty of the indwelling presence of God that is the sole source of meaning in the universe, in life. That's all that I'm going to teach on for today. And I hope that was interesting for you and that I've given you food for thought. And this teaching, of course, is recorded and will be rebroadcast tonight in the same location, same room here, at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Western or Pacific Time. And if you missed that, then you can download it off of our website, www.beitshemtov.org go to that page, main page, and then on the navigation bar, click on the button that says Audio Archives. And then you can download it and listen to it as much as or as little as you wish. In the meantime, our next shiur will take place this Wednesday at the same time, which is 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific. And I look forward to seeing you on Wednesday. And we will continue on the subject that we're talking about, which is the nature of Devakut. And we will continue in that subject. And so I hope to see you at that time. In the meantime, may you go. Don't forget to remember God at least twice each day. Go from strength to strength. Be well. Sagesund.